You didn't know your elbow came up and hit him in the head?
Are you asking me or are you telling me?
No, I'm asking you.
You're an expert?
No, it was on the replay.
So you're an expert?
Welcome to So You're an Expert, the podcast. My name is Dmitry Filipovich, and I'm joined by Cam Charon today. Cam, how's it going?
So you're an expert.
Yeah. Are you asking me or are you telling me?
I'm asking.
Yeah, this is your second appearance on the podcast, right? You made one when Harrison was in Toronto.
Yeah, we were
back in the summer.
Yeah, we were up in Tom Drance's attic.
Yeah.
And now I'm more familiar
now
West
you're
Coast
in downtown
living.
Vancouver.
Yeah. Oh yeah, you know, fantastic. In this city, you can actually smell the water. And it smells like water.
Yeah.
In Toronto, it smells like dead feet.
Yeah. Nothing. That's something you don't ever want to smell. So
no.
Especially in your water.
Exactly.
So we're gonna get really geeky and talk advanced stats and all sorts of goodness. So
okay.
I'm telling the listeners if that's not their forte, I mean, they can learn something today or they might just hate advanced stats even more than they did coming into this podcast. So we do both.
Don't turn it off. We're very entertaining fellows. Yeah. We had a really nice, laughy, fun conversation before turning
on
the mic.
Yeah,
so
we were actually we were just drinking some adult beverages, just hanging out, talking, and then we realized that maybe we should start recording instead of just wasting all that goodness.
Exactly. And you all would have really enjoyed the conversation.
Oh, it was way better than what you're actually going to listen to on this podcast.
Yeah. No, I don't think so. I think our best is yet to come.
Oh, is it? All right. Well, let's deliver on that promise then.
Okay.
I think we should start off, the natural starting point would be talking about the Sedins, because on Canucks Army, yesterday, or I guess a couple days ago, depending on when you're listening to this podcast, Thomas Drance came out with an article talking about how, in his mind, the Sedins actually have not been or will not be declining yet, and haven't been losing a step, quote-unquote. I commend him for, he did a very thorough job in looking at a lot of numbers and compiling a lot of data. And then the next day, you presented us with your rebuttal.
Mm-hmm.
I'll let you speak in a second, but I'll preface it by saying that I read both of the pieces and I agree with you. So, for those people that either have read that and kind of are still unclear or haven't had a chance to read it yet, kind of explain what you wrote about and what perspective you're looking at it from.
Well, basically, this is an argument that Tom and I, well, not an argument, but sort of a discussion that Tom and I have had over the course of a few weeks. And he's quite convinced, looking at numbers, particularly the number of shots that the Sedins generate, that all luck being equal throughout all seasons, where, you know, they don't get any added benefits to power plays or shooting percentages, that their numbers have stayed relatively consistent.
Yeah.
I took a somewhat different approach, though, and I approach it from more of a, well, how many goals do they score?
Yeah.
When I think what's really important to know about the Sedins is that there are few players who can really who can really play with very favorable shooting percentages. That is to say that when a lot of hockey players, they can't score on more than, say, 12-13% of their shots, but the Sedins are more 14-15%.
Yeah.
So it's not about the shots, it's about whether or not they're maintaining their production. And so I looked at it from a goals perspective. I mean, when you single out their Henrik Sedin's MVP year in 2010, we just completely, when you ignore that one completely because it was such a statistical outlier, you can tell that the Sedins are on a slight downward trend. And I do have some very interesting charts and graphs and stuff.
Oh yeah,
and you know,
well, you're a master of the charts and the graphs.
They're very fun to look at. I switched from Excel to Google Docs with the switch from my new computer.
Yeah.
And I've only just really started to get hold of it. So,
and would you recommend that switch?
Yeah, it's a little bit frustrating to work with Google Docs, particularly when you have a whole lot of data to work with.
Yeah.
It can't copy more than 50,000 characters at a time. And when I'm trying to find, you know, as much information as I can on all hockey players, not just Canucks, but all players, I'm looking for the next great superstar on
the next Dylan Reese.
The next Dylan Reese from the spreadsheets. And we're going to have to talk about Dylan Reese soon.
Oh, we will.
Yeah. But what do you like? What's your focus on this here? You haven't been around the advanced stats community before as long as Tom and I have.
Yeah.
But what's your gut feel on the Sedins? And
well, here's the thing.
How do you judge them?
I'm kind of trying to, and we discussed this before we got on the air, but I'm looking at it from both like an eye test perspective and a numbers perspective. So I'm not trying to overly like rely too much on one of those. And for me, I watched a lot of Canucks games last year, and they just did not look like the same players that they were in previous years. Like, for relative to their own standards, I mean, they were still very good, and they're definite bona fide top line players, and will continue to be for at least the next couple of years. But they went through cold spells in production that is very uncharacteristic for them. I mean, they're pretty much like the epitome of consistency when it comes to that.
Oh, yeah.
And I just, there were a few worrisome trends that I noticed that kind of had me raise my eyebrows. And now this is, we're obviously speaking completely relatively to Sedins because, I mean, they're still pretty darn good and will be next year, no matter what.
Some like the highest scoring forward in the Western Conference, Henrik was.
Yeah.
Which it's apparently pretty good.
Yeah, I hear that's a good thing to do. But, and, you know, I completely buy the argument, and I actually made that in an article I wrote about this about a month ago, where I just pretty much said that I completely agree with the fact that the Sedins won't have the sort of decline that a conventional forward does just because of the way they play. Like, they don't, I mean, they're professional athletes, so they're physical specimens. But compared to some other guys, like, they don't overly rely on strength or speed or anything. Like, it's their chemistry and it's their guile and it's just, like, things they do that mesh.
Yeah. And what's really funny is that they've sort of changed their game every year. To really become, you know, well-rounded players.
Yeah.
Like, I think when they came in, you might have to fact check me on this, but I do believe that Henrik actually had more goals coming in. I think he was more of the scorer coming out of junior.
Hmm.
And I might be completely wrong on this, but I do recall one summer that Daniel Sedin really wanted to work on his shooting.
Yeah.
And he'd come out and he took more shots, and I think he scored, you know, he'd come out and scored 20, 25 goals. And that's, I think that they look at these, you know, they have these concerted efforts every summer to try and do something different, add something to their game somehow, and the organization really helped them. The organization gave them a lot of power play minutes as soon as right coming out of the lockout, and that hurt Brendan Morrison, Marcus Naslund, and Todd Bertuzzi, who we, as in Vancouver, we looked at them as the top line.
Yeah. The gold standard.
The West Coast Express.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden, we noticed that the guy scoring these goals were, you know, a wonderful man by the name of Anson Carter.
Hmm.
And we all know, but we
the
all
third
know,
Sedin bro.
Well, and when we looked at, when we watched the games, we realized, well, Anson Carter is not a terrific, he's not a tremendous hockey player. He's not getting 30 goals because he's really, really good. Yeah. He's getting 30 goals completely situationally. And that's, you know, And so the Canucks really started to set the Sedins up into those more offensive situations. And then, you know, they got Marcus Naslund for about half the games after the team trade Bertuzzi. That was really the only working line the Canucks had. And, like, I think remember that series against the Stars when nobody was scoring ever?
No.
You know, in the overtime of game one, it was just Daniel to Henrik after a really, you know, sort of a pretty, not a really long shift, but, you know, with some sustained pressure and a few chances. And I've watched that shift about 20 times a week.
Yeah.
But then in game seven, too, it didn't look like the Canucks were generating very much against Dallas's defense. And it was a power play goal from Henrik Sedin, just Daniel out of the corner that sort of kicked them off. And then they worked it around to Olin, who, you know, Trevor Linden had his deflection goal, another game winner in game seven.
Yeah.
And even in periods when the Canucks weren't scoring, the Sedins were always dangerous.
Yeah.
And I don't think that we've seen those periods of really extended, you know, minute-long, two-minute-long shifts. They would usually come against Edmonton, so they're on the count. But I guess you can see what I'm...
Here's a question I'll raise to you, though. Do you think that we can kind of... We can place some blame on... as the listeners just heard, Cam opening up another adult beverage.
I spent my whole
life... I'm sure his analysis is about to get more interesting. Yeah. Do you think we can blame some of that, though, on just how much hockey they've played in the recent years? Like, do you think that they're going to come out of this lockout whenever the season starts just guns a-blazing because they're just going to have such fresh legs?
That's an interesting perspective. And one thing that I really like about Henrik Sedin is his longevity.
Yeah.
And no other forward played every single regular season game between the two lockouts.
Yeah.
So Henrik was completely unique in that regard. And you had a couple of playoff runs, a Stanley Cup Finals appearance, two Olympic games. The guys played a lot of hockey.
And it's not just regular hockey. I mean, people love to trash the Sedins for being soft and whatever, and Sedin's sisters. But, they go up against the other team's best every single night.
Oh, yeah. And the quip about the Sedin sisters, one, never use that because it's very misogynist and assuming that women are weak because if there's anyone from Boston listening here, number two is if you're looking to call them weak, you're not watching the same guys that I've been. I remember even when they were rookies, Daniel Henrik in those old games when you can pretty much get away with anything, and they'd get cross-checked from behind, but still managed to maintain control of the puck, keep it right along the boards, just dominate with that down-low cycle.
Well, it's really ironic that two guys have gotten kind of the label that they're weak when their bread and butter is the cycle up against the boards.
Exactly.
Like,
and really, you know, this guy, Daniel Sedin, his team was down by 3 goals in Game 6 of the Cup Finals, and he was just taking punches to the face because he was trying to draw a penalty.
Yeah.
How... That is
that's noble.
There we go. That's very
noble.
Noble
act.
That's not a signifier that he's weak at all.
No,
and
that's a team player.
Again, Boston.
Yeah,
get it together.
I think also the Chicago fan base. I think you're directing that towards them because Dave Bolin made the Sedin sisters joke, right?
Yeah, they'll be really interested if he's traded for the Longo.
Oh yeah. Well, I
would you make that deal?
Well, okay. Here's the thing. I talked about this with Drantz on a podcast. I think a month or two ago. And it's an interesting dilemma because on paper, Dave Bolin makes the Canucks a far superior team.
Yes.
Just based off of what we've seen him do, like his track record. He would give them something that they could really use. But I'd still be very curious to see how he'd be received in that locker room because I still believe that there is an element of like chemistry and like getting along with your teammates. And after everything they've been through, especially the Sedins, at this point of their careers, I'm sure they do almost anything to get a better chance to win the cup.
Yeah.
So if anyone would receive them well, it would be them.
It's the Mike Duco conundrum.
Yeah. It's very interesting. Except this is significant.
Well, I don't know. Like, you look at, Are you a basketball guy at all?
I am.
Yeah, you saw the Miami Boston opener, and Ray Allen came onto the court with a Heat jersey, and he was just shaking the hands of all the guys from the Celtics.
And
he goes up to Kevin Garnett, and Kevin Garnett just doesn't look at him.
That's it, just looking straight ahead.
I think it might be more difficult for Bolin to look back at Chicago after this because I think that when you join a team, you know, you all understand that you're working towards the same goal, and there's sort of the treacheries, you know, you're looking at it more from the other side. Like, I don't think that any Canuck is going to think that Dave Bolin is a double agent.
No, I agree.
The reason why I would disagree with making that trade, and it's one that's been sort of, it's been, you know, proposed a bunch. And I think Bolin, he's a very elite third line center that would really, you know, that would really help the team. He would be the player Manny Malhotra was before Malhotra got his eye injury.
Exactly.
However, you know, that those third line centermen, they're way easier to find than an elite goalie like Luongo. So obviously there need to be, you know, a few more pieces coming back Chicago's way. I think that the reason why you make that deal, the only reason why you make that deal Luongo for Bolin is just a screw with Chicago, because then they're left with no centerman.
True. True.
Which, well, if you're a Vancouver fan, you like that. If you're a Vancouver manager where you're looking at all other 29 teams as the same competitor and not, yeah, you know, focusing on one or two rivals.
Yeah. Well, I'd be
I'm fine with screwing over Chicago.
But would you be screwing them over, though? I mean, they would still have a very, very good team.
Yeah.
And if they got some good goaltending, yeah, I mean, they'd definitely be like one of the favorites out of the West.
Yeah. Right? And you remember the goal that who was the Danish guy, Bodker?
Yeah.
He came in on the breakaway in the playoffs and just had the puck knocked off his stick, but it still managed to go through Corey Crawford's 5-0.
Now, to be fair to Corey Crawford, I'm a believer in him.
Okay.
And I might be just foolish because I own him in a keeper league.
Okay.
I need him to be better.
Okay.
But
is there money riding in the keeper league?
Oh, there is.
Okay.
There is. Otherwise, I wouldn't care. but, you know, we won't get into Corey Crawford because this isn't a Chicago Blackhawks podcast, yeah, but we've seen goalies have very good rookie years, struggle, yeah, in the second year, and then some, yeah, guys just completely fall apart mentally, and some guys use, mm-hmm, the next summer to get better.
Yeah,
Jimmy Howard.
Yeah, Jimmy Howard's one. One I'm looking at is James Reimer in Toronto.
Yeah.
I think is a definite candidate for that. The thing, Crawford's just so, he was so up in the first year and so down the second, yeah, year. You have no idea.
But so is Jimmy Howard, to be fair.
Yeah.
I mean, he was elite in his first year, and his second year he had like a 900 save percentage.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that there's sort of like a bigger gap between Crawford's high and his low.
Yeah.
And Howard's high and low. I'd have to check on that, but I just think that you're looking at these two extremes, because that 2010 series between the Canucks and the Blackhawks, Corey Crawford was unbeatable
in that game. I mean, yeah, he was good in game six, but yeah, game seven, I mean,
game six,
I was afraid of him, and I think that's the ultimate test. If you're like a fan of another team and you're afraid of a player, I mean, that's like, I was like, we can't beat this guy. He's, mm-hmm, he's insane.
Mm-hmm.
And then Chris Campoli came around, so.
Sort of like how good Luongo has been against Chicago recently.
Yeah.
Although no one will tell you that except for the numbers that will show Luongo has been completely elite in and against Chicago in like the last 10 games or so.
Yeah.
With the exception of one playoff game, which people are focusing on.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, okay. So we kind of touched on the subject of a Luongo trade.
Okay.
And we'll get back to that in a second. Let's kind of just finish off this Sedin discussion.
Okay.
So what we both agree that there have been some worrisome trends lately.
Mm-hmm.
What's your outlook for them in the next couple of years?
I think the bet that Tom and I are going to end up making.
Yeah.
By the way, I'm going to preface this by saying I'm reading this excellent book by Nate Silver called The Signal and the Noise.
Yeah, it's actually on the desk right now.
I could quote from it if we wanted. I could give you a nice reading.
Yeah.
Actually, Nate Silver has a better voice for this sort of thing than I do. He pretty much has a thing where if people attach money to their forecasts, they will, you know, forecasts will significantly improve.
Yeah.
So I think the basic thing that Tom and I have is I think he's going to be below a point a game.
Yeah.
He thinks above. So I'm thinking over an 82 game season, something between 70 and 80 points.
I think 80 is a pretty fine.
Yeah, 80 is good.
79.5.
Yeah, 79.5. Yeah. That might be the over under, but yeah. Tom still thinks that he'll be above a point a game. I don't think so.
I don't either.
Honestly, when you look at the difference of 5 points over 82 games, it's such a marginal thing. No,
it's just playing Edmonton one more time.
It doesn't really matter, you know, as far as Canucks standings goes.
Yeah.
So I don't think that the Canucks position, the standings, will necessarily be affected too much by Henrik Sedin being an MVP candidate versus being just another really, really good first liner.
Yeah.
So I think that people are going to need to look into perspective. When I say that they're on the decline, however, you know, all the factors that you mentioned, you know, they're not increasingly athletic. They're methodical players. They enjoy they enjoy the game. They enjoy growing. I think that they're going to be able to slow down their decline.
Yeah.
But, I'm going to end my argument by saying, but, yeah.
Yeah. That's a really good place to end it. I agree. I think somewhere between 75 and 80 points is a very reasonable expectation. And that's where I would personally expect them to be. So,
And hit us up on Twitter, at Cam Schron or at So You're an Expert.
Yeah.
And Give us all your forecasts.
Yeah, or at Canucks Army, at Thomas Drantz, just wherever you feel like kind of letting your voice be heard.
We'll try and figure out exactly how the Canucks fan base feels about this sort of thing. And I think it would be fun to come up with a hashtag at some point. We'll figure that out later. But we will get a really legitimate prediction contest because I think
there's something really here, Cam. There's something.
Oh yeah, there really is. Yeah.
So I feel like we've done that argument justice.
Okay.
Now there's another thing that we need to talk about.
Okay.
You have been running Leafs Nation for the past how long? Six months? 8 months?
Yeah. Am I allowed in this city?
You know what? I'll give you a visitor pass.
Okay.
I'm giving you a visitor pass just for the podcast, though. So as soon as you leave my place, I can't guarantee your safety. But
I own no Toronto Maple Leafs merchandise.
No, it's a business. It's a business, folks.
It is.
So you've been running Leafs Nation, so you're kind of you're aware of everything that's going on there. Yeah, and you've been writing about the Leafs players and the Luongo trade
in recent months. I'm quite involved with everything the Leafs are doing and the qualities, the pros and cons of all their players.
Yes.
So
we're going to go over some of the rumored players from the Leafs.
Okay.
One by one, and we're going to pick them apart.
Okay.
And we're going to start off with the fan favorite.
Okay.
Mr. Blackface.
Tyler Bozak. Who also today on Twitter, by the way, we're recording this on American Election Day. Polls are just starting to close. Mm-hmm. I could go check Twitter, see what the earlier
I wonder where
are.
Tyler Bozak's vote is going.
Anyway, so Tyler Bozak came out with a bunch of very pro-Republican tweets, which if you know the hockey establishment on Twitter, they didn't necessarily enjoy that too much.
Yeah.
So Tyler Bozak doesn't exactly have a very fantastic reputation due to his online presence.
No.
However, he also doesn't have much of a fantastic reputation among many Leafs observers because he's not the centerman. He's not a good enough centerman to play in between Phil Kessel and Joffrey Leupel.
Yes. Well, and this is going to be our main point about Tyler Bozak. Once again, we agree. And I hate doing podcasts like this where I agree with the guest because it makes for funner.
I think Tyler Bozak's going to be on the Canadian Olympic team in 2014.
I disagree.
Okay.
But, I mean, I wrote about this as well on Canucks Army, and I just looked at the numbers, and I've actually watched probably far too many Leafs games for my liking, just based on how much they're shown on Hockey Night in Canada and TSN. And there's just nothing that I've seen from Tyler Bozak as a player that leads me to believe that he has been, I think as Jason Botford put it, it was mismanaged or he's miscast.
Miscast. But, Bozak's played Botch's argument was that Bozak's been miscast as a first liner when he's really a third liner. But when he plays those third line minutes, which I dissected as away from Phil Kessel.
Yeah.
Because he does that second line center spot has been, that's been owned by Mikhail Grabowski.
Yeah.
He's done a fantastic job with it.
He's bought that real estate.
Oh, yes. And I think he should be looking to upgrade. But Mr. Bozak, when he's away from Phil Kessel, he turns into this awful hockey player. And, Kessel's a really good hockey player. And I don't think a lot of people truly understand that. He's everything that you really want in a winger. He's really quick. He gains the zone. He loves carrying the puck. And he scores a lot of goals.
Yeah.
However, Tyler Bozak's been slowing him down. He's slowing down an elite scorer through his prime years. And when he's taken away from Kessel, his possession numbers are brutal. It would be fun to see whether or not he even wins faceoffs away from Kessel.
That would be an interesting. Because he is overall, he's an above average.
Overall, he's an above average baseball player. Yeah.
Baseball? He's playing baseball?
Baseball player, yeah.
Hashtag baseball. Get that trending, guys.
Wow.
No, but
where is my mind right now?
No, but I agree, and I don't know. It's I think that that's a really silly argument to make that he's been miscast because there is nothing to prove that he would be effective in a different role. He's just not very good at hockey.
Yeah,
and I think you wrote this, and I completely agree. It's that he is pretty much the definition of a replacement player. If you put him next to a really good player,
he will do good.
He'll get by.
Yeah,
but as soon as if you try to get him to make other people better or do something like make an impact in the game, he won't do it.
He's a centerman equivalent of Anson Carter.
Yeah.
And it's a guy who I think thinks of himself as a little bit more value more valuable just because he has some high point totals or you know, has some sort of boxcar indicator of how good he is. Hey, look at me. I'm a first liner in an original six team.
Yeah.
And which, given the state of most original six teams, is not... Actually, all the American ones are doing pretty well. But Toronto, Montreal aren't, so...
Yeah.
But that's
Yeah, pretty much.
I'm a first-line center for a Canadian original six team, which... Yeah. And last year, those people were Tyler Bozak and David Desharnais. And none of them are particularly good.
True. Still, it's something I'd probably kill for. But
it is pretty cool. Yeah. You know what? Well, here's the thing. He's a way better hockey player than I am.
Oh, without doubt.
Yeah.
Without doubt. But not as good of an analyst.
Yeah. Probably not. Mm. And I think that I respect my own Thompson Rivers University education more than his University of Denver education, given the things that Mr. Bozak has done the last few days.
It's definitely raised some questions.
Yeah. Go to theleafsnation.com. Actually, just go to Google, type in Tyler Bozak, cite theleafsnation.com, and you will come up with a lot of really fun stuff of the last few days.
He's definitely provided you with a lot of material.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess he's doing his job. I don't know.
he's good for the basement industry.
It is. So Tyler Bozak is not an option. I mean,
no.
I don't see that as any sort of a viable return.
Maxime LaPierre has much better indicators before he joined the Canucks.
Yes. Let's get into another name quickly I'll give you 30 seconds to just say why he's not a viable return, and then we'll kind of get past him.
Okay.
Matt Fryden.
Oh. He's Tyler Bozak, but he's a winger,
which is even less valuable.
So he's a guy who, like, a lot of people saw him as a rookie. He scored 8 goals.
Yeah.
But he was 24 in his rookie season, and scorers tend to peak at around 24, 25.
Yeah.
So Matt Fratton is as good as Joey Crabbe.
Yeah.
Who the Leafs didn't even bother to re-sign.
Well, Tyler Bozak was a rookie at 24 too, right?
Yeah. It's a lot of these late blooming NCAA guys. They don't turn into I'm trying to make a bet with some people in the Leafs on Leafsland who really liked him.
Leafsland. Like Playland or a little different?
It's worse. But if Matt Fratton is traded to a team and he becomes a top six player, and
wow, can you hear the sirens on the podcast over there?
Yeah,
going nuts.
Well, someone probably just read that the Canucks are considering Tyler Bozak and Matt Brown, and they just
decided
they couldn't live in that world.
Yeah. And there's cars flipping over. It's a bad scene.
It's a riot.
It is a riot. We're so Matt Fratton, I don't think he'll never be a top six player on a contending team.
That's all we have to hear. Yeah.
Or top nine.
Now we're gonna get in. We're gonna dissect this first rounder that's been. No, I'm kidding. We're not gonna talk about a first round.
The first round draft pick.
Yeah. No. What do you think that could be? No. There's two names now, and we're gonna kind of talk about each of them a bit more in depth than Matt Fratton.
Do both of their names start with J?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. I don't know how to spell your name, so
we'll get into one first. Jake Gardner.
Okay.
Now you're a little dubious on the Jake Gardner.
I'm not on the Jake Gardner train so many as a lot of other Leafs bloggers are.
Yeah.
I've looked at defensemen who are primarily offensive guys. You know, very recently, so, you know, in the years where we could see their advanced stats and just sort of whether or not they trended. And I think I brought up 6 comparables. I don't remember exactly who they were, but 3 trended to be really good defensemen and 3 trended to be not so good defensemen.
Yeah.
So I'm a little mixed on Gardner as to where he'll end up. That said, he was a plus possession player on a pretty bad possession team.
True.
Which is good. However,
he was sheltered a lot, right?
He was very highly sheltered. He saw a lot of time with Mikhail Grabowski, who's the only player on the Leafs who is any good at controlling the puck.
Yep.
I am dubious. However, he's a guy that, you know, the Canucks could definitely shelter.
Well, that's the thing. You know, when you're talking about this Roberto Luongo trade, that's the reason why I'm so quick to shoot down a Tyler Bozak or a Matt Fratton. Because if you're gonna, you're not. I think we agree that the Canucks will not get an elite prospect in return.
No.
Yeah, right? So that's not going to happen. So the next best thing is at least get a guy who has the upside to be a valuable asset.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see that in a Tyler Bozak.
Yeah.
A Jake Gardner, you could talk me into, you know, a couple years from now, he could be a stud.
Yeah, yeah. And Jake Gardner is sort of, worst case scenario, he's going to be an NHL player.
Yeah. He'll be a power play guy, right?
Yeah. The worst case scenario with Gardner is that he'll be a guy on the power play, maybe second unit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, scores 4 or 5 goals. Otherwise, you know, pushes play and
yeah, helps move
protected.
The puck, right?
Yeah. You know,
you could do worse than that.
So you could do much worse.
That's his basement.
Yeah,
his ceiling is obviously very high.
Well, actually, Gardner's basement is pretty much. It's also, you know. If he's
well,
on
yeah,
the
his basement
he gets hit by a car.
He's serving Big Macs at McDonald's, So we agree that he has, he definitely has the upside that you'd hope to get in return.
But put it this way, he's a better gamble than Marc-Andre Gagnon, who I still think the Canucks gave up on a little too soon.
Yep,
I think
he has been a healthy scratch for the Charlotte Checkers, though. So
The Charlotte Checkers, call them?
Yeah, that's their name, right?
The Charlotte Checkers?
Yeah.
I thought it was the Checkers.
The Checkers.
The Checkers?
The Checkers, yeah, the Checkers. Checkers, whatever they are. Yeah.
They play baseball.
Yeah, the Charlotte Checkers are the baseball league.
Yeah.
I think
Grignani was miscast with the Canucks.
Yeah.
Because he showed some indicators of some talent somewhere in there. I'm not sure that the Checkers see the same thing. Yeah. But Gardner is a guy who was perfectly cast with the Leafs.
Mm-hmm.
Brought in as a rookie, saw a lot of offensive zone starts, played a lot of power play minutes, and, you know, scored a lot of points. And that's what I think a lot of players are going to look at. I think that – I'm not too sure because you're really looking at only 1 year and just – there's so few comparables in the last 5 years for you know, players who have that kind of season.
But you need to take that gamble if you're a Mike Gillis, you're gonna have to step out on a limb a little bit, right?
Oh, yeah.
You're not gonna be able to get a proven commodity. So
yeah, I like that trade better from Toronto's end than I do Vancouver's end.
Of course.
Because I think Luongo is more durable as an asset. I think that there's only been like 3 goals over the last 5 years who have been in the top 10 save percentage.
Yeah.
It's like Luongo, Lundqvist, and Backstrom. And Backstrom might not even be on it. But
And Backstrom's very injury prone. Luongo is like pretty consistently
Luongo's still elite, and he's going to have, you know, 4 out of his next 5 years are going to be elite.
Yeah,
and then
afterwards you're not even really paying him. You're paying him scraps.
And it really depends on what the CBA looks like. If they're just going to completely take away the retirement clause, other than screwing over a whole bunch of the powerful franchises, which I don't think that they're going to let themselves do this when they sign this deal.
Yeah.
I think that there might be some amnesty for his contract. But even then, he's not even getting paid too much. It's $5.3 million.
No, it's very reasonable.
Yeah.
All right. So, and then we're going to talk about the last name. This is a guy that I have a little thing running on Canucks Army. By the time you're listening to this, it might already be up there.
A little thing with him.
Yeah, a little thing. We had a fling.
Okay.
It was just over the summer, though.
Okay.
Anything significant.
By the way, he had a wrist injury.
I saw that.
Okay.
I wrote about that. That's going to do it for today's show. No. his name is Joe Colborne.
Joe Colborne.
Joe Colborne.
He's a big guy.
Yeah. I saw him live as the Marlies came to Abbotsford to take on the Heat this past weekend. And I made this point. A lot of, if you search up the height and weight of certain players, they're usually distorted, whether it's to make the guys seem more physically imposing to the average fan or whatever it is, whatever the reasoning behind it.
Oh, yeah. If anyone's looking at scouting reports for this upcoming draft year, Jordan Subban is not 5'10". He is considerably less than that.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you brought that up because I can vouch for Joe Colborne being 6'5".
Really?
He is a large individual.
You brought out your ruler.
Well, I didn't bring out my ruler, but the eye test passed for 6'5".
Or with a yardstick.
No yardstick, no. It was just the eye test. It was just the eye test. I mean, I'm 6'2", and he was towering over me.
Yeah.
So he's a large dude.
And for a big guy, he's a surprisingly good skater and playmaker.
He's a surprisingly good skater. His vision and his hands are off the charts.
Yeah, I think when you look at hockey players who are really that big, you sort of you visualize, you know, power forward. everyone under, you know, over 6 foot three,
yeah,
or 220 pounds.
They're the next Milan Lucic.
It's Milan Lucic. It's Zach Cassian. It's I don't have any other names, but Tyler Biggs is one, and yeah, and they you know, they love to cast him as a
power. Hey, this isn't a Leafs podcast, okay? With your Tyler
Whatever.
Biggs.
Okay, fine. We'll talk about Joe Colborne then. But Joe Colborne is very, very much a skilled guy.
Oh, yeah.
And I've been actually gone out to see any Marlies games,
yeah,
despite living in Toronto, but they...
Why would you? You're not a Leafs blogger or anything.
Exactly, yeah. I don't know. I watch him on TV when he's on, and he's... He is very, very good around the net.
Yeah.
He has his, like, these little pockets where he's right next to the crease, and a lot of guys would shoot, but he'll find a guy who's a trailer who gets a better chance.
His vision might be too good, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's very impressive.
And he had a really hot start to last season, and then just sort of tailed off in the second half. And a lot of us thought it was regression. Maybe he's not as good as we think.
And then he revealed that he had a...
As it turns out, he was playing hurt all year, which is a thing that happens in Toronto. So get Joe Colborne out of here. I think he'd be a very good second line center one day.
Now, here's the thing. Let's talk a little bit about Ryan Kesler. Okay. You're not prepared for that. Do you think that Ryan Kesler, right now, the Ryan Kesler that we know and love, do you think he'd be better off if he got moved to the wing and he had a center that took up space and could get him the puck and he could just run wild and do all the things that he loves to do on the offensive end?
The really funny thing about Ryan Kesler is that he plays the game like a winger.
Yeah.
But he's the natural centerman on that line.
Yeah.
And that line, Kesler, Booth, and Higgins, they have consistently good possession numbers, scoring chance differentials. They do very good at each end. I think Kesler plays in the defensive end like a centerman,
mm-hmm,
but I think the closer you get to the opponent's net, that's when he starts to stray away from his area on the ice. He takes a lot of long perimeter shots that have no effect. And yeah, you're really right on that, but you know, defense is such a big portion of the game.
It is. Yeah.
You know, he's really good at working from that second and third forward position in the defensive zone. You know, whether it's just getting support or, you know, putting pressure on the point guy, he's good at those things as a centerman.
Yeah.
But once you're past center, it's like he likes to enter his own game. I'm not sure how you can reconcile that, but I'm sure that there's a way to coach players. Well, you know, Colborne, you know, you like, this will be your job in the defensive zone.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you're on the offensive zone, you'll take more of a, you know, more of a secondary approach.
Yeah.
By the way, the way that I see the game is that the centermen control the play. The wingers sort of get the majority of the shots.
I think that's how it should be.
Yeah. But Kessler, he shoots a lot and he shoots too much.
Yeah.
And he needs some way to tone his game down. And
well, I think obviously, like, a big factor was his shooting percentage, which was very high 2 years ago when he scored 40 goals.
Yeah.
But I think it's no coincidence that year coincided with Manny Malhotra being an absolute monster in his own zone.
Yeah, and
where Ryan Kesler was just let loose on the opponent.
Yeah. And he had a really high shooting percentage. But I think that part of the problem is that everything worked out too well for Kesler that year.
Yeah.
That he thinks that he's that player. But nobody else thinks he's that player. I don't think he's that player.
Yeah.
Nobody's that player. If any player was that player, they'd be like, that was...
We agree that he's somewhere between that player and the player he was last year, though, right?
Yeah, he will.
He's like, and there's like a fine medium between those
exactly.
two.
Exactly. I'm trying to think about a decent historical compare.
He's a 30 goal guy who is a monster when it comes to driving play.
Yeah, and those guys are very, very valuable in the NHL.
Yeah, especially on the second line when you have the Sedins on the first line.
Yeah.
I mean, it's good. It's good. Yeah.
And that sort of thing is that Kesler, he can take on that a more defensive role.
Yeah.
Especially with Higgins and Booth. Higgins. You just saw me blush here, but
yeah.
Christopher Higgins is one of the he's a perfect hockey player.
Well, he just walked out of the washroom without his towel, so
and
you saw his abdominal muscles.
And ladies, anyone who's seen me shirtless.
Yeah. You thought you were looking in the mirror or what?
Exactly. Higgins is a very good hockey player.
Yeah.
And I think we can leave it at that. And he was when he was brought in, not only did he provide adequate support for Kessler on that line, but he also provided a check on him. And Higgins plays a game in the offensive zone that I think we want Kessler to play, sort of as a centerman.
Yeah.
That's the weird thing, because Higgins is also a natural center. He played that a lot with Montreal and New York when he was there. So it's sort of funny how they sort of switch. So I think switching Kessler to the wing means you have to find a different guy there who can sort of provide the same sort of chemistry.
Yeah.
It's weird how that works. And I don't think that switching Kessler to the wing without finding the exact right guy to play center is necessarily going to
work. Well, no, it wouldn't work on this current incarnation of the Canucks.
Mm-hmm.
But I was just throwing it out as if the Canucks acquired some sort of center that could play that role. Mm-hmm. It'd be an interesting kind of topic to breach.
And it'll be really fun to see what they do with that second line next year, because they really legitimately have four guys who could play on the second line. I think, are we still counting Mason Raymond up there?
You might be.
No, I'm thinking about Yannick Hansen actually.
Oh, that's so interesting, but oh, man, I can't.
I'll write about it for Canucks Army next week.
When I'm feeling a little sad and down about life, I just think of the potential of a Yannick Hansen, Chris Higgins, Max Lapierre third line.
Ooh.
And I swoon.
Okay.
They would irritate the other team so much, and they would just set up the Canucks in so many glorious scoring opportunities, and no one would give them the credit that they've earned.
Except Canucks Army.
Yeah. Oh yeah. We'd be all over it. I think we'd be literally like blogging about it every day.
Exactly.
So, man, but yeah, that's interesting. Hansen, he's killing it in the Finnish league right now.
So. And I do think, and you made a very funny joke on Twitter today.
Yeah. He's learning
Finnish.
Oh, you like that. Yeah. Yeah. It was a little wordplay.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
And I think that with the Luongo trade, I think the Canucks would be better off getting a forward and see if they can run with two second lines instead of, you know, because they were really set on player roles last year. I think too much.
Yeah.
They had those two bottom two centermen and Paulson and Malhotra. That didn't work as well as I was expecting it to.
Yeah.
And you know, they played a lot more defensively, and I can quantify it in how poorly defensively they played. They really locked down offensively when they were up a goal.
Yeah.
They just stopped taking shots. They stopped allowing shots. They really locked it in, and it didn't work.
Yeah,
I don't.
Yeah, I agree.
I think it was an experiment gone wrong, and that's the worry with moving Kessler to the wing, right? You never want to run into this experiment gone wrong, because by the time you've played enough games to get the right data to know whether you were right or wrong in the call, it's too late to change it.
Yeah,
you're either right and it's good, or you're wrong and
it's bad.
And it's like Tiger Woods changing his swing. It took 2 years for him to get back to where he was, and then. He had some other things going on. This was after the swing change, and he was unstoppable after he did the swing change, and then he was.
Life happened.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's going to be it for.
Is it? We're not going to talk about the other two, Chris Tanev and Dylan Reese.
All right.
It's right here.
All right. If we haven't lost everyone already, I guess we'll lose our final couple listeners.
All right.
Who
might be Chris Tanev and Dylan Reese?
Over this past weekend.
Okay.
Chris Tanev and Dylan Reese.
Yes.
Both scored goals.
And same night?
Same night.
Wow.
Now, were you in Vancouver at the time, or were you still in Toronto on Friday night?
Friday night, I was actually, I just got into Vancouver, so I was just, you know.
So was there some sort of advanced stat signal thrown up into the sky, a la the bat signal?
Maybe, but it was sort of cloudy.
It was sort of cloudy.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I'm just going to let... Dylan Reese doesn't have the notoriety among my following as Chris Tanev does.
Yeah.
When Chris Tanev does anything, literally everybody... Like, five or six people will tweet me about it.
Yeah.
And they'll think I'm being so clever because I'm being... And don't get me wrong. I love the updates.
Yeah.
But he's...
Chris Tanev just ate a hot dog.
What? Really? How fast?
Very quickly.
Oh. He... he's a young player who really dominates the possession game,
yeah.
which is particularly important for yeah.
which
for
is what you hope to see. Right?
Anyway, when I was looking, I download a ton of data every day when I'm bored.
Yeah,
and so a few months ago, I was downloading all this data over the last two seasons. I was looking to see if I could find some predictable measure for puck possession.
Yeah.
And I did. I'm not going to tell anyone what it is because I still want another year to make sure that's spot on and test my own predictions against the unknown.
And make people pay for it as
yes.
insiders.
And a name that came up as a comparison to Chris Tanev over the last couple of years was a guy named Dylan Reese, mm-hmm. who I'd never heard of. And I checked out his advanced numbers, and I checked out who he played with, how they improved when he was on the ice, and they were really favorable. I thought, I've never heard of this guy.
Yeah.
But why is he so good and I've never heard about it?
Yeah.
And no one's heard about it. So I wrote a little post about how great Dylan Reese was, and he got signed July 1st. So yeah. I think
And now he's playing very well for Pittsburgh's AHL team.
The Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins. And Pittsburgh is a team that when James Myrtle of the Globe and Mail He wrote a few posts on the Money Puck Revolution
yeah.
back last fall when Moneyball came out.
Yeah.
Or was it in the spring? Whoever. And
it was in the fall.
And Pittsburgh was the team that talked the most openly about they're looking to new quantitative analysis for, you know, everything. It's a supplement to what they do. This is not going to overtake everything, obviously.
Yeah.
And so I thought it was really interesting that Dylan Reese was scooped up first day by a team that does keep some internal data. So...
But you know what's the sad thing, right? It's that Dylan Reese will never, ever, ever get an opportunity on the Pittsburgh Penguins.
I think
they're the most loaded organization when it comes to defensive depth.
Well, but he'll be a player on the you know third pairing or so.
Well, he'll continue to be a guy where you're going to keep writing about him year in year out,
And no one will know who he is.
No one will know.
It's like they have another guy in Pittsburgh named Paul Martin.
Yeah,
and it was not the ex-Canadian Prime Minister.
No,
but. From a statistical perspective, Paul Martin's very, very good, and there's a reason why he gets so many minutes. Fans there hate him.
So does Ray Ferraro here.
Oh, well, Ray Ferraro follows me on Twitter now, so I hope...
Don't badmouth him?
I'm not going to badmouth Ray Ferraro or any of my many loving Twitter followers.
Your groupies? Ray Ferraro is one of Cam Tron's groupies. let's get that trending.
By the way, Ray Ferraro's son, Lennon...
Yeah, he's doing very well for Grand Rapids.
Former Kitsilano Blue Demon.
Ooh, really?
Yes.
So is Pamela Anderson.
She went to Kitsilano?
Yes.
So is Bruce Arthur.
First time ever that Bruce Arthur and Pamela Anderson will be in the same sentence. first and last time. All right, that's going to do it. That's going to be it. That's going to do it. That's going to be it. We hope you guys have enjoyed me and Cam getting... very geeky, talking a little advanced stats, but we also just talked like regular stuff, so
yeah.
No one should have been too overwhelmed by it.
Yeah.
Cam, you got anything to plug?
Oh, I have to plug things, don't I?
You don't have to.
I don't know. Well, wait. You plug something, and I'll think of something to plug.
I mean, you should go on CanucksArmy.com. There's some good stuff every day, and you won't go wrong checking that out and kind of... Learning some stuff while being entertained.
You Vancouverites out there, there's a wonderful False Creek restaurant and brewery called the Tap and Barrel. And I was there on Saturday and an excellent beer from the Whistler Brewing Company.
This isn't what I meant by plugging.
Call it Chestnut Ale.
And what is this, your sponsor now? Is that...
No. But I really enjoyed it. I think that
you just have to get that out.
I think that most of my followers would like to get out there. It's an excellent. They're really building it up. There's going to be some excellent restaurants around there in the coming while.
People can reach you at Cam Charron.
At Cam Charron, CamCharron. I'm French.
They can do that.
Wait, just what I'll say.
They can do that. You guys can reach me at So You're an Expert. We can have a chat.
Mm-hmm.
Let us know. We talked about this earlier in the podcast, but for some reason you're randomly tuning in towards the end. Please let us know about what you think the Sedins will do in terms of points.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have some fun with that. And I can't get into this too much right now, but I'll give you guys a little tease, which is what we call that in the industry. Me and Cam might be doing more work in this capacity in the near future. So stay tuned for that. I don't think we can say anything more than that. But Cam,
yes,
it's been fun.
Oh, it's been a slice, bro.
Thanks for coming on. We'll shake hands. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk to you guys later. Thanks for listening.
That's it, guys. Thank you.